thank you for coming. I don't have a slide, I apologize, but in fact I have no financial relationships to disclose. Iron deficiency remains the most common single nutrient deficiency worldwide and in the United States. It's been known for decades, in fact for generations, that individuals with iron deficiency anemia suffer consequences in terms of their functional capacities and especially their work capacity, for example. And in young children, it's been well documented that iron deficiency anemia carries with it neurodevelopmental and cognitive impairments that may be lifelong. The individual who is in negative iron balance before they reach the stage of iron deficiency anemia over here on the far right passes through the stages of iron depletion and iron deficient erythropoiesis, which is represented in this graphic by the empty iron stores in the bone marrow, but as yet a not sufficiently reduced volume or mass of circulating iron in the hemoglobin to be called anemia, to be defined as anemia. It's been less well known or less well demonstrated whether or not individual children who are in the stage so-called of pre-anemic iron deficiency, in other words, iron deficiency without anemia, have similar consequent neurodevelopmental consequences as they will when they get to the stage of iron deficiency anemia. However, there has been increasing numbers of studies that have indicated that this is in fact the case. This is an example of one of those studies from Betsy Lozoff's group published in Pediatrics 2 years ago, in which they looked at the proportion of children in a sample of 9-month-old African-American infants who were attending routine care at Michigan Children's Hospital's primary care clinic. What they showed is that those children who are iron sufficient, the infants who are iron sufficient here on the far right here, had the highest proportion having attained object permanence. On the far left, those who had iron deficiency anemia had the lowest achievement of object permanence, and those in the middle who had non-anemic iron deficiency or pre-anemic iron deficiency had an intermediate rate of achieving object permanence that was statistically different from the other two. So that does suggest, if you will, a dose-response relationship to the adverse neurodevelopmental effects of iron deficiency. Based on studies like this, the American Academy of Pediatrics, in its November 2010 revision of its recommendations on the diagnosis and prevention of iron deficiency and iron deficiency anemia in infants and young children, states that even more important than anemia itself is the indication that the more common iron deficiency without anemia may also adversely affect long-term neurodevelopment and behavior, and that some of these effects may be irreversible. Now, that raises the question of how prevalent is non-anemic iron deficiency in the population, specifically in the U.S. NHANES 2 data from gathered from 1976 to 80 showed a very sharp differential by income between infants and children. These are toddlers and preschoolers between the ages of 1 and 3 years. If they were living in a family with an income below the poverty level, they had over 20% iron deficiency. If they were living above the poverty level, they had 1/3 of that rate, or 6.7% iron deficiency. And by the way, this differential has never been satisfactorily explained to my knowledge, but iron deficiency at the time of NHANES 2, iron deficiency in young children, was a very sharp biochemical indicator of poverty in children. In subsequent waves of NHANES up till today, this poverty differential has been shown to decrease and eventually to disappear by the time of NHANES 4. The AAP report cites these data, so you can see that children above the poverty line, those below the poverty line, had respectively 8.9 and 8.6% prevalence of iron deficiency. There was no differential between black and white infants at 7.3 and 6.6%, although Mexican-American children had a roughly twofold increased prevalence of iron deficiency. But look at the definition of iron deficiency here. Iron deficiency was defined as an abnormal value for at least two of the three indicators of iron sufficiency, serum ferritin, zinc protoporphyrin, and transferrin saturation. So why two out of three? Where does this come from? This is, in fact, the standard definition of iron deficiency that's been used in all national surveys, such as this one from Looker and colleagues, published in the JAMA in 97, the prevalence of iron deficiency across the U.S. population. The definition of iron deficiency was based on these three laboratory tests of iron status, similar to the approach taken in NHANES 2 to be considered iron deficient. An individual had to have an abnormal value for two or more indicators. Well, where does this come from, this definition of two of three, and what are what's the basis for the definition? The definition comes from this report, published in 1984. It was commissioned by the FDA and produced by the Life Sciences Research Office of the Federations of American Societies of Experimental Biology by an expert scientific working group. If you look into this report, on page 20, you'll find this statement: no single biochemical indicator is diagnostic of iron deficiency. Well, this statement is just plain wrong. There is probably not a clinician on this planet who would not make the diagnosis of iron deficiency and treat the patient for iron deficiency if the patient had a low ferritin and nothing else. Everything else could be normal. If your ferritin is low, you're iron deficient. It is a highly, highly specific test for iron deficiency. It basically has no false positives. It's not sensitive in all populations at all times, but it is highly, highly specific. So why did they say that? In fact, the American Academy of Pediatrics, in its current recommendation, says one or more tests of iron sufficiency, abnormal tests, warrant treatment, and does not recommend getting more than one, in fact. Well, further in that paragraph from this 1984 report, the authors cite a study by Cook and colleagues that looked at the prevalence of anemia in a population sample. In association with either one, two, or three abnormal markers of iron sufficiency. And they said since those who had only one abnormal marker were only very slightly had elevated prevalence of iron deficiency only slightly above the others, one measure shouldn't be considered sufficient to make the diagnosis of iron deficiency. There's several problems with this approach. The first problem was the fact that the statement that there is no single indicator that can make the diagnosis of iron deficiency. The second problem is that this study, which is cited as the basis for the two of three stipulation, there was, in fact, a difference of about a third in the prevalence of anemia between the group with one abnormal indicator. Sorry, I can't get mine. There it is. And the rest of the group with no abnormal indicators, although it didn't achieve statistical significance. But the third problem with this approach, and this is the one that I think is not answerable, is that this study contained no children under the age of five, no young children, despite the fact that their iron metabolism and needs for iron are dramatically different from that of older children and from adults. So the statement of requiring two of three abnormal tests to make the diagnosis of iron deficiency across the lifespan, including in small children, is based on data that did not include any small children. Interestingly, on that same page, the authors say after extensive discussion, it was concluded that the presence of two or more abnormal values for iron metabolism indicators could be considered indicative of impaired iron status. It doesn't provide us with the contents of that discussion. I would really be interested to know what it was, but we don't know. That brings us to zinc protoporphyrin. Protoporphyrin is the penultimate molecule in the biosynthetic pathway to heme. When ferrous iron ions are incorporated into protoporphyrin, you get heme. It's quite catalyzed by the enzyme ferrochelatase. In the healthy red cell, in the red cell of the healthy and iron-replete human, a small number of zinc cations also get incorporated into protoporphyrin to form zinc protoporphyrin, There we go. But in the normal state, there are very few of these ions. It's estimated that for every million molecules of heme inside an intact red cell, there are about 50 molecules of zinc protoporphyrin. However, if there is insufficient iron in the pathway because of iron deficiency, or if this step is poisoned by lead, for example, then the pathway for protoporphyrin shunts into incorporation of zinc at an increased rate, and you get elevations intracellularly and in the peripheral circulation of zinc protoporphyrin. So zinc protoporphyrin becomes a marker of both lead intoxication, though it's not very sensitive for lead intoxication, and iron deficiency. So this has been studied for a number of years using the zinc protoporphyrin measure as a screening test for iron deficiency. I don't have time to get into these data, but I'll just call these references to your attention. Ray Yip and his colleagues in Pediatrics in 1983, elevated levels of EP by itself can be regarded as evidence of inadequate supply of iron. Siegel and Legrand, Clinical Pediatrics, 94, ZPP proved to be an effective and inexpensive addition to CRIT. Retmer and colleagues in Pediatrics in 99, increase in the zinc protoporphyrin to heme ratio was demonstrated to be a sensitive, specific, cost-effective test for identifying pre-anemic iron deficiency. No clinical situation is known in which a ZPP to H ratio that's elevated does not warrant intervention or follow-up. Zugo May and colleagues in 2003, our study confirmed the sensitivity of EP as a screening test. Labbe and Dewanji, and also in 2003, ZPP can be best used as a primary screening test in patients likely to have uncomplicated iron deficiency. And finally, Crowell and colleagues in Pediatrics in 2006. ZPP screening is much superior to hemoglobin measurement alone. Increases in ZPP levels should be considered clinically significant. The key observation was by Betsy Lozoff 5 years ago in a study of infants in Detroit, African-American infants in a clinic in Detroit, found to her surprise that the FEP, which is another measure of erythrocyte protoporphyrin, was elevated in 52.3% of their sample. Over half of these children had an abnormal ZPP. Well, this was very consistent with our clinical experience at Boston Medical Center and in its previous incarnation as Boston City Hospital. We had consistently seen over decades very high rates of abnormal ZPP prevalence not associated with lead toxicity. So with the advent of the electronic medical record, we were able to take a retrospective look at all children ages 8 to 18 months receiving their initial routine screening for anemia and lead. This covered a 9-year span from the onset of our electronic medical record in late 2001 to December 2010. The state lab stopped routine reporting out of ZPP results. We excluded only those children who had evidence of lead toxicity with a level of equal to or greater than 10 micrograms per deciliter, and anyone who had the diagnosis of sickle cell disease was excluded. So we were able to look at the ZPP and hemoglobin results for almost 4,000 children, and this is what the results look like. The mean ZPP of 37.3 was above the cutoff for normal, which in our state lab is 35 micrograms per deciliter of whole blood, 35 micrograms of ZPP. And in terms of the median, 47.3% of these children had an abnormal ZPP. If you do the chi-square, this is not statistically different from Betsy Lozoff's finding of 52.3% of young children, infants in their case, with abnormal ZPP in Detroit. When we looked at children who had anemia, low hemoglobin, 2/3 of them had an elevated ZPP compared to less than half who did not have anemia with a hemoglobin of greater than or equal to 11. So our conclusions are that it appears that approximately half of predominantly low-income infants and toddlers sampled in Boston and Detroit have an abnormal ZPP, which is a specific indicator of iron deficiency. The NHANES definition of iron deficiency is not consistent with the clinical definition that is in use globally and by our professional organizations, certainly pediatricians. And the prevalence of clinically important ID infection of iron deficiency, therefore, in infants and toddlers is not known, I would maintain, and may be much higher than suggested by studies using only the NHANES definition. Thanks.